big show for you here today. It is time. Flip the script. Who is going to be this year's Jackson Smith and Jigba? Talking breakout wide receivers with Ray Garvin of Destination Debbie. This is a banger of an episode. It's an electric one. So much to get into here. We look at Jackson Smith and Jigba, how he was able to break out last year. What were the factors that went into that? Of course, then we flip the script to 2025. We talk through Roma Dunze. We talk through Ricky Pearsall. We talk through George Pickens. Shoot, we even talk through Keon Coleman as a potential breakout guy. A lot to get into today. All that more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Wednesday, June 11th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. It's a hell of a day to talk ball, but before we do that, I just want to get some unfortunate news off the top here. If you haven't seen it, on social media yet, Andy Behrens and Dalton Del Don are no longer a part of Yahoo Fantasy, Yahoo Sports, etc. No way around it, man. This really sucks. I really don't know what like else to say about it other than this sucks. It hurts. Those two guys are fantastic at their jobs. They're both fantastic people, and you know it just. I never want to not talk about what's going on here with you guys that listen to the show, that consume the show, and I just want to be honest about that and be straightforward. Like, I don't want to have those guys just drop off the podcast feed and let that remain a mystery. So, you know, there's obviously a lot that goes into these decisions. I'm certainly way above my pay grade on that. That's not really worth unpacking here, but what I think is worth unpacking is, you know, the one consistent thing in this business, and you know, I've been in it now, I guess, a decade plus now, is change. And you know, this is a change. This show has been through a lot of changes. If you've listened to it over the years, people have come, people have gone. That is the unfortunate nature of the beast. I always think back to my days at NFL Network, you know, working with a bunch of my best friends, and you know, we should have all died there. You know, we should have worked there forever, but that's not how it works. That's not realistic. These things happen. And you know, I just want to just talk about Andy and Dalton for a second here before we move on. And first of all, let me talk about Dalton here. The guy is an absolute workhorse. He is just a wealth of knowledge about fantasy, about football, and about life, man. Dalton is a great person who, anytime there's anything going on in my personal life, Dalton was always quick to reach out. So I will really miss him from that perspective. I'm not going to never speak to Dalton again, but I'll miss him being on the show because, you know, we started when this show wasn't, you know, me hosting every single day, he was there in the Stat Nerd episode with me. And that's still some of my favorite stuff that I've done here at Yahoo for, I've been here since 2018 now. And those were some of my most treasured moments, was doing those shows with Dalton. And I think he grew, I think I grew, I think the show grew because of that. And we will always be Stat Nerds forever. So huge shout out to Dalton and all of the great work that he did for many, many years before I got here. And all the years that we worked together, I will truly miss having him on the show. And when it comes to Andy Behrens, Andy is like a freaking institution. He is a legend, a living legend. I'm remiss if I can't even make a damn old joke here. I think Andy would prefer that. But no, seriously, Andy is a legend in the space. He's a legend here at Yahoo. It's not going to feel like Yahoo for a long time without Andy Behrens being attached to it. So I really just can't even put into words what he means to both this company and this show, and frankly to me. Again, another wonderful person. That's what makes this stuff really hard, is these guys are great human beings in addition to being great at their jobs. And Andy in particular, I mean, I don't think anybody is ever going to make me laugh harder on the show than Andy Behrens did. The amount of just joy he exuded, like my exact type of dry and slightly biting sense of humor. And again, just somebody that knows fantasy, knows football, really. Like he could sit down and have a elite level fantasy conversation, and at the same token, just talk about like what's actually going on in the games. And if you know me, you know that's what the type of conversations I really value. So really going to miss Andy on the show. Another, just like I said, A-plus person, A-plus analyst. So again, I just wanted to get that off the top here and talk about the fact that these guys are no longer with the company. And, you know, I think it sucks. Like, again, there's just nothing, no better way to say it. I said a lot of words here, but the reality is it sucks. There's going to be change. When people, you know, leave, it always stinks. And I think that's just where we're at right now. So with that, let's make a rough left turn and get to the rest of the show. All right, joining me for today's show, very excited about this one. It is Ray Garvin of Destination Devi. Ray, what's going on, buddy?
Matt, how you doing, baby? I'm excited for this one. Wide receivers, a position very near and dear to my heart as well as yours. I'm a big fan of yours. Excited to talk about this. It's June, baby. Wide receiver breakouts. Let's get it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mutual respect. Been a longtime fan of your work. So I feel like this having you on the show and doing this is probably a little bit overdue. So that's on me. Notoriously poor at planning and podcast hosting, but they let me keep doing it anyway. So I'm not going to say no. As the listeners know, for the entire month of June, we are doing Flip the Script. It is back, our annual summer series. And as Ray alluded, this episode is focused on wide receiver breakouts. What we're trying to do for this episode is identify this year's Jackson Smith and Jigba, a year two to year four, so that we can have a bunch of different candidates involved here that breaks out. And the big question that we have to answer here, Ray, before we talk about JSN last year and before we talk about our candidates this year, is like, what is a breakout season? You know, because I said this on the last episode with Scott, you know, the Detroit Lions, Ray, are out here like, oh, we expect a breakout season from Jameson Williams this year. We really think this is his year. I'm like, no. Last year was his breakout season. What are we talking about here? So when you hear the phrase breakout season, Ray, I do think JSN gives us a great example. But before we kind of dive into him, like, what is a true breakout to you at this position specifically?
I mean, I think you kind of hit on it, right? I would agree with you that Jameson Williams did, in fact, break out last season. I think there are levels to the breaking outness, right? I think for Jameson Williams, at that point, for what he had produced on the field, go over 1,000 yards last year, be a big play threat, be a big part of that offense alongside Amon-Ra St. Brown, you can very much well argue that he was a breakout candidate last year, and he did, in fact, do that. For me, it depends on the player that you're talking about, right? I think that there's a world where Jackson Smith and Jigba's breakout might look a little different than what Jaden Reed's breakout may look like, what a Keon Coleman or Ricky Pearsall, what their breakouts may look like. So I think it just depends on the type of wide receiver that you're talking about, but it's absolutely leveling up from what they were the year before. You know, does that mean assume the wide receiver one role? Are you going to turn into a Jamar Chase, CeeDee Lamb level of producer? Or are you going to show something that makes us excited to get about to think about investing in you next season? So I think it just depends on the player you're talking about, the level of sort of breakout that one should expect.
Yeah, I like the way that you described it there as there are levels to this, right? Because, yeah, we would all love for our favorite wide receiver prospect to become the next Jamar Chase. Odds are that's probably not going to happen. Like, most guys don't break out into that truly elite tier. That's why it's special. But I'm sure I don't know if you feel the same way, so I don't want to put words in your mouth. But to me, when I do like dynasty content, I always get a little frustrated when it's just like, well, yeah, but if he's not going to be like a quote difference maker for my team, why do I care? I'm like, because it's a lot of cool guys at this position. There's a lot of interesting players to talk about. And look, you got some of these dynasty teams, you're starting 4 or 5 guys. So if I can get a guy to break out from somebody I wasn't even considering as anything more than like a wide receiver 4 or 5, or was kind of a middling, I don't know when to start you, wide receiver 3, to just, yeah, Jameson Williams last year, wide receiver 19, or Jordan Addison at wide receiver 20. Like, those are still breakouts to me, even if they're not true. Like, yeah, I broke through to being a wide receiver 1 in my previous season.
Matt, you nailed it. And you know why there are levels to the breakout levels for wide receivers, and why This is just such a fascinating discussion because I truly believe it's one of the most interesting and misunderstood positions on the field. Normally, you got three wide receivers on the field for every team at all times. But Matt, as you very well know, just because WR is after that last name does not mean you occupy the same role or you utilize the same way in one offense to the next and with one quarterback to the next. And I think that's what makes trying to find the next breakout wide receiver a very fun, fascinating, and interesting case study, because there are so many ways to think about how these players are going to score you points in fantasy football.
Yeah, and as you well know, and obviously if I didn't believe this was true, I would not have been doing what I've been doing with my life for the last 12 years with reception perception. There's a lot of factors that go into that breakout. Yeah, like we need the player to be talented, but you also need to be in the right offense. The passing conditions have to be right. The quarterback has to be right. So that's another reason why there's levels here. Like a guy might have that little breakthrough season in year two, but if the environment can really come together in year three, year four, there is maybe, again, another level to jump here. But I do love to focus on just the actual individual player. But with that, let's talk about JSN from last year, because again, he gives us such a clean candidate of what a breakout is. And I think he provides really good qualifications to be like this year's Jaxon Smith-Njigba. Ray, the guy was going outside the top 30 receivers in consensus ADP last year. He was very, very easy to get last season. I think let's start there. What did people get wrong about Jaxon Smith-Njigba coming into his second season in 2024?
I think we had been spoiled for so long with these mega producers at the wide receiver positions as rookies, whether that be a Chase, a Puka Nacua, Justin Jefferson. And as excited as we were for Jaxon Smith-Njigba, when it didn't happen right away and he was relegated inside, it was like a belief that he could never do more. Like, he's just going to be the slot guy. They're not really going to move DK Metcalf. I really don't want to invest the requisite capital to get my hands on this asset. And it didn't take long for the team to just realize he was the best guy that they had. And he could do a heck of a lot more than just operate on quick routes on the inside. Man, I mean, he's running down the field, seams, toe routes. He's doing things that a lot of people just, I guess they didn't believe was within his skill set. And because of that, he just kind of was dismissed. And then when you saw it happening, and then he closed out the season the way, I mean, he is, like, that is what you would love to see. That natural progression from year one to year two, where the talent, the skill set, the environment all line up, and he's just getting started.
Yeah, it's a great breakdown there. And I think the biggest thing that was misunderstood with him last season, in his rookie season, because if you looked at, you know, kind of the per route metrics, which are great, like yards per route run's a great metric, but it doesn't take into account the fact that this guy is playing behind two Pro Bowl wide receivers in DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. Like, there is only so much meat to pull off the bone here. And even if you're a great prospect, and Smith-Njigba wasn't in that Chase tier. He wasn't in the tier of guys, you know, that were top 10 draft picks, anything like that, but he was a very, very good first round prospect. You can come to the league and it's going to take a lot for you to jump two guys that have been with the organization a while, that have played with the quarterback a while. Not to mention, he also missed time in his rookie training camp towards the very end of it with the wrist injury that slowed things down. Right. So that stuff is so important when we're looking at rookies, and just what a guy does in a rookie season from a production standpoint does not totally define him. But let's talk about JSN a little bit this year, especially because before we get to sort of our candidates for who's going to be this year's Jaxon Smith-Njigba, because I loved what you said there about him winning on downfield routes and becoming more than just kind of a pop gun slot receiver. I charted him for reception perception. The profile should be on the site by the time this episode drops. 71.9% success rate on corner routes, 83% success rate on out routes. Man, he was a monster on those like downfield routes against man coverage, especially last year, which is why I really do think the ceiling is still very high for him in this offense this season.
It's incredibly high. And I just want to go back. Don't gloss over the fact that what you said is so true about him being in a situation where he was behind two veteran Pro Bowl receivers, right? I know we didn't like Tyler Lockett that much, and We want, but he was behind that. But once he got the opportunity to step out there and show what he can do, I mean, the end of that season, there was no doubt. You can just look at the usage between he and DK Metcalf. The Seahawks were, that is who the priority was. You know, there was a reason why DK Metcalf was frustrated, because he knew that this offense now ran through number 11, Jackson Smith and Jigba, being able to win downfield and still create underneath. He's the type of player. He is, I don't want to throw comps out there because he's his own guy and he's an incredible player, but he is the type of receiver who can be so dominant underneath. And if he continues to develop on the outside, like, how do you slow him down? And I do think Cooper Kupp being there allows JSN to be a little more position flexible along that offense. He's a very, very, very good prospect and a very good player for us in fantasy now.
Yeah, I've said this stat a lot since the end of last season, but he averaged 4.96 yards per route run against man coverage from week 10 on, most among wide receivers. So I don't really have any reservations or hesitations about him being more of an outside receiver. I guess the only thing that maybe would give me pause about, you know, taking JSN this year at what is somewhat aggressive. It's still actually, like, people are already baking in a slight step down at wide receiver 14 this year for him, because he was wide receiver 10 last season in Yahoo scoring. Is just the pass centric nature of this offense. This offense last year under Ryan Grubb, which I don't know what you thought about Ryan Grubb's offense last year. Didn't love it. I didn't love watching it. I think the only good thing was what they did with JSN. Beyond that, it was a pretty messy unit. They were top five in passing rate last year. I would imagine that under Clint Kubiak this season, they're going to want to run the football a little bit more, and the defense should take the necessary step for them to be in some more of those situations, Ray.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can't – the offense is dependent on the person calling the plays and designing the offense around. I'll just say this. I don't believe that Sam Darnold is a great quarterback, right? But I do think that he can get the ball to the necessary players. And I think it really just concentrates where you probably are going to project the ball to go. I don't think it's going to be this air raid attack. It probably should be pretty concentrated, led by a strong rushing game. I'm still very, very much in on Jackson Smith and Jigba. And personally, I wouldn't be moving him down at all. I do believe that this is an ascending player who can, will, and will show that he's going to be better in 25. That's just my opinion on JSN.
Yeah, same. I don't want to bet against, like, just straight up, I don't want to bet against an ascending, young, really good wide receiver just because, like, oh, they added Cooper Kupp into the mix. What's his role going to be? Are they going to run the ball more than they throw the ball? All that type of stuff. Because at the end of the day, like, I do think, you know, the cream rises to the top, talent moves the needle. And this guy's just so talented, man. I mean, you said you don't want to make a comp. I do think, actually, if I was to make a comp based on his year two reception perception data, and this is actually the guy that I thought he compared to pretty well as a prospect, is pretty similar to, like, Keenan Allen, you know, Keenan Allen, the guy.
Dude, I kid you not. That's who I was going to say. I didn't want to say it because I'm like, Matt, you, no lie. That's who I had in my head, was Keenan Allen.
Yeah, and I think that, again, that's very instructive because Keenan Allen, obviously great from the slot, but he doesn't need to be a slot player. He's always been so good against man coverage. And by the way, this is something I talked about on Football 301 with Nate and Charles, that we're also – this is something we're going to have to adjust to in fantasy terms, and I haven't really unpacked that yet, I don't think, on this show, although maybe I – time's blending together. Who knows? But, Ray, like, this offensive tree, this coaching tree – from Shanahan, McVay, all those guys, their offenses are so condensed that we blur the lines between, like, what is a slot and what's a flanker anyways, because it's so condensed. So, like, I think that's something that the fantasy community, like, when we look at depth charts, like we got on the screen right now, you know, it's like, slot matchups, this, that, and the other. I do think that is changing a lot more than it was when you know, we got started making content, however long ago that was.
Yeah. It's not the, it's not the true just three wide receiver and one dedicated slot player that stands there the entire game. I mean, they're moving all over the place, interchangeable a lot, right? It's more so, as you know, the route concepts and how they use them inside of that offense, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he's going to, I love the potential route deployment that he's going to get in this offense. A lot of play action, a lot of in-breakers. It lends itself pretty well to Jaxon Smith-Njigba's game. So we are still very excited about Jaxon Smith-Njigba as we head into his third season, but we're going to toss to break. And then when we come back, we are going to look at who's going to be this year's version of Jaxon Smith-Njigba right after this. All right, we are back. So we looked back at Jaxon Smith-Njigba's 2024 breakout season. Now it is time to flip the script to 2025. All right, if you're new to Flip the Script or if you forgot how this goes, we're each going to throw out, we have four candidates each to go over here. We're going to nail it down to three finalists, and then we're going to vote on who is this year's Jaxon Smith-Njigba. It's going to be a whole process here, right? Don't worry about it. But before we do that, we got qualifications here to go over here. Like I said at the top, JSN last year was outside the top 30 receivers in consensus ADP last year. This player has to be that this year, okay? JSN was wide receiver 41, average ADP of 103. What a steal. He finished at wide receiver 10. So that is sort of the ballpark we're trying to work in here. So there are certain second-year guys like Marvin Harrison Jr., Xavier Worthy, they're eliminated from this conversation because they're already being ranked in the top 30 wide receivers. They're going inside the top 30 receivers. Certain guys like Jameson Williams doesn't count because he's going inside the top 30 receivers. And obviously anybody that's finished in, we'll call it like wide receiver 15 or so, does not count for this exercise either. We're looking for somebody that has yet to meet their expectations that we might have had for them as a prospect. So, Ray, as the guest, I'm going to let you go first and give your first candidate. But before I throw it to you, I do just want to note to the audience out there, some of these candidates that Ray is going to throw out here, I did not pay him to put these guys on his list. But I will let you go first. Who is your first candidate to be this year's JSN?
Listen, you did not pay me. You could check my own timeline. I am so bullish and so excited for this second year wide receiver stud. Has nothing to do with Matt Harmon. It's all about me right here. And I'm talking about Chicago Bears wide receiver Rome Odunze. This is a player, Matt, I don't know what else we could have asked for, right? He has the number one overall pick in Caleb Williams at quarterback. He's got the draft capital. You got a great offensive mind in Ben Johnson from Detroit. And when you just look at Rome Odunze's skill set and what he brings to the table, his ability to play inside, outside, and in my opinion, run the most robust and diverse route tree on that roster. Some of the comments made by Ben Johnson about some other wide receivers on that Chicago Bears passing attack. This is a player that I am all in for right now for the 2025 season. I am 10 toes down. 10 toes down that when we look up at the end of the season, the player that's going to have led Chicago Bears in receiving is Rome Odunze. Receptions, Rome Odunze, and the player that people view as the unquestioned alpha, and if you want to call him the Amon-Ra St. Brown of this offense, moving forward and beyond, it's number 15, Rome Odunze.
I mean, let's just end the show right there. What more needs to be said? No, but yeah, I love it. Obviously, people know that Rome Odunze was one of my favorite prospects in last year's draft class. To me, it was a big three. It was Harrison. It was Neighbors. It was Odunze. Like, he was in the same tier of prospects as those guys. I think the biggest pushback, Ray, to Rome Odunze breaking out in his second season, it is actually, and I think I said this at some point during, like, in the middle of last season, I believe it was a conversation that Andy Behrens and I had, was like, this is the same stuff that happened with JSN last year is going to happen to Rome Odunze going into his second season. Where it's like, look back at the yards per out run, 1.18. That is 12th among rookies last year. It's not where you want it, right? When we've got guys like BTJ and Ladd McConkey and Malik Neighbors well over 2.0. You just look at any efficiency metric, it's not going to be there for Rome Odunze. But Ray, number one, we just had this conversation about JSN. Behind two established pro receivers, Rome Odunze, behind two established pro receivers. By the way, two guys that had baked, especially Keenan Allen, had baked in history with the wide receiver coach last year. Anybody who was paying attention to the Bears last year knows there was some political issues in that wide receiver room. Secondly, Find me any good efficiency stat from the 2024 Bears offense. You can't do it. Like, oh, Roman Dunze wasn't getting the yards. Nobody was getting any yards in that offense last year. So I love your points about this sort of being a blank slate in a new coaching staff in Chicago this year.
Well, and that's what it is. And I think sometimes we just look at, it's easy to look at Amon-Ra St. Brown today and say, no way, Romo Dunze can't be a freaking all pro. And I wouldn't expect him to be an all pro right out the gate, right? It took Amon-Ra a couple of years to for people, even in Dynasty, to really buy in. It took a few seasons for people to be like, okay, I guess he truly is that guy. But when you just look at the things that DJ Moore does well, Matt, you know what it is. A lot of screen routes, a lot of short area stuff. Romo Dunze's ability to win in multiple quadrants on the field, if you're just talking about skill set for skill set, bar for bar, he profiles more like the guy that Ben Johnson used as the primary target. That would be Amon-Ra St. Brown. The pedigree is there. We're not talking about a fifth round pick. We're talking about a player who was drafted very high in what looks like a historic draft class. This environment needed to change. Caleb Williams needs to be a little bit better, but in my opinion, all of those efficiency metrics, I want to give him another opportunity with Ben Johnson, a competent offensive coaching staff, before we close the book on Odunze, not just being a good player, but I think he's got an ability to be an elite player for us in fantasy football.
I see the same potential. And, you know, again, when you just look at like his reception perception metrics last year, 71st percentile success rate versus man coverage, 87th against press. That's what makes me really excited about him, is that I do think he can play inside out. And I don't think Ben Johnson's going to come in here and say, like, I need to use a guy exactly like I use Amon-Ra St. Brown, because he used St. Brown that way because that's the best way to use him. And that's what's exciting about all these guys here. You know, Luther Burden and Colson Loveland, two guys they drafted this year, it's exciting for them as well, because I think that he's going to find the right buttons to push. That's what he does. Even Jameson Williams, man, they did so much role catering to get him in the right positions, you know, that he wasn't just like a speed take the top off guy. He was used in more of these like in breaking routes, yards after catchways. I think that can happen for some of these guys this year as well. So Odunze right now, like, you don't even have to really buy what Ray and I are selling about him as a talent. And we are absolutely buying on that talent that he has. You don't even have to buy that to say, like, he's a pretty good pick at wide receiver 36 right now. That is the type of year two profile that you kind of want to take and hope that they can make a little bit of an ascension there.
Absolutely. I really don't have the situation, right? He's going to get an opportunity. And a lot of times we're chasing that opportunity. He's going to have a very good shot to be a good fantasy producer. And then you just see some of the other little things that they've done to help make life easier for Caleb. The upgraded offensive line. And I do think the addition of those two pass catchers, it makes things easier on the offense when you've got more coverable targets. And yes, that does make, you know, distribution of targets a little trickier. But I'm not banking on rookie year Luther Burden to come in and put DJ Moore or Romo Dunze on the bench quite yet.
Same. I'm with you there. And I really do think Odunze just profiles more as like the Ben Johnson type of, like, he's tight on the details, all of that. I love DJ Moore as a player, but that's just really not his game. I think Moore can have like a nice rebound season, and Romo Odunze can also break out here and outkick this wide receiver 36 draft pedigree. So I think we like the role. My one question for you is just, where are you at with Caleb Williams? Because obviously we need him to cooperate to go along with this sort of breakout season.
Yeah, I'm a little more positive, right? I still want to see some more, Matt, just being, you know, all the way clear. He wasn't the best rookie quarterback last year. He wasn't second best rookie quarterback in his class last year. But I do understand how much poor environment can impact that position in particular. I think the talent is all there. I like what the Chicago Bears have done to make him feel comfortable. I think he can do it. I don't know if he'll ever become Patrick Mahomes, like a lot of people were saying when he was coming out. But I still think that Caleb Williams did more than enough in his rookie year for me to feel comfortable and confident that with an offensive coordinator and a head coach and a mind like Ben Johnson, that we can get the best version of Caleb Williams, whatever that ceiling may be.
I think we can too. And I think, again, it's just the importance of the blank slate here. So we'll see who gets in there. We'll see who earns it. I'm with you that I think Roma Dunze is going to be one of those guys that earns it. So I'm going to just executive decision here. Moonwalk him right to one of these three finalists, because he was your first name off the list here. He would have been my first name off the list here. But let's talk through one of my candidates here, Chris Olave, who is wide receiver 37. And I do think he's one of these guys that we can sort of, has he already broken out? In my opinion, yes. But I think he's just worth discussing here because, again, wide receiver 37, overall 68 ADP, he is certainly someone that is not being treated or ranked like a guy who is a player that has already broken out. The reason I want to just include him in this exercise, even if he doesn't become a finalist, Ray, is that I do think there is another level to jump for Chris Olave, more than the kind of, you know, 1,100-yard-ish, 5 to 6 touchdown type player that he's been so far. I think his talent is better than that. And I think the biggest thing with him is he is getting a quarterback change. And Derek Carr is Derek Carr, but he is certainly someone that has been above board about being like, you know, a league average starting quarterback. We don't know who Tyler Shuck is going to be yet, but I think that if they develop better chemistry than Carr and Olave had, because for whatever reason, those guys were just never on the same page, I do think that maybe Shuck could be someone that gets Olave to that next level, even if it is a sort of rocky offense there in New Orleans. So that was sort of my reasoning for having Olave as a part of this exercise.
Well, Olave is a really good receiver, and he's a really good receiver. And when he's on the field, he's incredible. You know, I was watching that show Receiver, and Devontae Adams said something on that show that is just, it stuck with me with the wide receiver position. And I really kind of value this metric when I'm looking for breakouts, when I'm trying to, he said, I get paid, they paid me to do two things. He said, pick up first downs and score touchdowns. Pick up first downs and score touchdowns. And I think the emphasis on the first down portion of that is something often overlooked. You've got to have a money player when you need to pick up and matriculate the ball downfield and you need to pick up a third down. And when you look at Chris Olave, I mean, he's top 50 in the NFL when he's in the slot. 53.8% of his targets are converted for first downs or touchdowns from the slot, Chris Olave. And that was last season. He was 45th in the NFL. And the good thing about him is if I look at those same metrics, you know, picking up a first down on third downs when you're targeted, he's inside the top 70 when he's aligned on the outside. So he can play inside and outside and show that he's capable of moving the ball downfield and doing what the offense needs to do to keep the chains going, to keep the offense alive. How much do you believe in Tyler Shuck? How much do you believe in Tyler Shuck or Spencer Rattler or whomever's playing quarterback for the New Orleans Saints? It feels like he should just be the primary target earner all over the field, Matt, downfield, short area. He's healthy. He's out there at OTAs. I don't hate this, man, because if Olave is good, he will 1,000% outkick his ADP. What is his ADP right now? 30, wide receiver 37?
Yeah. Yeah.
We've been here before, Matt, where we thought we knew offenses. Oh, this Texans offense isn't going to be any good. Fade everything about. Don't want Denver. And then you look up and you're like, damn, I wish I had a couple of players from that offense. If he's good, absolutely, he will outkick his ADP at wide receiver 37, no doubt.
Just to put another point of emphasis on the first downs idea of this, and I love that sort of framing of it. Since he came into the league, so the 2022 season, he is 10th in first downs per route run. These are the guys that are ahead of him. Tyreek Hill, Puka Nacua, Amon-Ra St. Brown, CeeDee Lamb, A.J. Brown, Justin Jefferson, Nico Collins, Stephon Diggs, Drake London. He's one ahead of Ja'Marr Chase. So like from an efficiency perspective, Olave has been that guy. It's just the environment hasn't quite been there. We don't know if the environment is going to be there this year, but we don't know. But I do like the look, it's an ambiguous situation, and when there are ambiguous situations, there can be profit here. So even if Olave doesn't end up being one of our finalists, we can discuss that when we get to that portion. But I do think he is worth mentioning here. And I'm with you that if he's healthy, if the concussion problem doesn't rear its ugly head, which is, you know, it's just, we don't know that variable. We can't speak to that. then I do think he can outkick this wide receiver 37 ADP. But all right, let's get to your second candidate here. Another guy, like I said, I did not pay Ray to put this guy on his list because he was definitely going to be on mine as well.
This is my guy again. You know, I didn't know you liked this player, Matt. Come on. You're talking about a third year wide receiver that can dominate from the inside. Josh Downs, Indianapolis Colts. This is my breakout candidate. And there's a lot of layers to this Indianapolis Colts situation right here. A lot of layers to that. You see the projections right there on the screen. 101 targets, 63 receptions, 931 yards, 4 touchdowns. I'm curious, is that with Anthony Richardson and Daniel Jones? Does it matter? Is it with one or the other? But I think his skill set, it does. If Daniel Jones is the starting quarterback, he has the ability to be that dynamic, explosive element on that offense. And you can just do like a process of elimination here. When you think about this off, Alec Pierce and Adonai Mitchell are probably in a role where they're going to do one thing. Like they're going to be asked to do a certain thing. Michael Pittman is a fantastic receiver. He's steady Eddie. We know what he is. We know what Pittman's going to do. He's going to go out there. He's going to be a security blanket, chain mover. He's a good player. The player in this offense that has the ability to break out and help us in a multitude of ways, it's Josh Downs. He's got the skill set. We've seen it in spurts so far throughout his young career. This environment, too, has been very, very, very shaky, to say the least. When you have instability at the quarterback position, it's just tough. But if Steichen and this Daniel Jones thing can work, and we've seen Jones be okay at times, I think Josh Downs is one of those players where you could look at some of his efficiency metrics and some of the things that he's done in spurts. Very, very good player. Very good skill set. And I think he's got a good opportunity to be a heck of a lot better than 46 wide receivers ahead of Josh Downs? I don't know about that, Matt.
Yeah, look, we know the concerns for the profile here. It's a crowded offense. You listed off a lot of names there. They drafted a first-round tight end, and it's not exactly like a great quarterback situation, obviously, as we know. Anthony Richardson is banged up heading into training camp, and basically every time someone opens their mouth, whether it's Shane Steichen or Chris Ballard, they talk about consistency, and they seem to want Daniel Jones to win this job is sort of the vibe that they're giving off. And Ray, as much as I hate to say it, I do kind of agree with you that Josh Downs, Daniel Jones, there's some overlap there in like what Daniel Jones wants to do. I don't want to sit here and say like I'm rooting for a Wandale Robinson PPR scam with Josh Downs, because let me be so clear. I think Josh Downs is several tiers better than Wandale Robinson. Like, I think Josh Downs is one of the best young receivers in the league. I had him, again, people know that I'm a huge fan of his game. Great route runner, great separator, really good in contested situations. I had him as the wide receiver 4 in the class that he came out, and he went friggin' 79th overall. Absolutely embarrassing for the league. Guy's a good player. He could do more than Wandale Robinson, but if that's what we get from a fantasy perspective, we're going to do better than, you know, wide receiver 47, because this player is better than that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just, again, schematically, he just does something a little different in that offense. The bet on Daniel Jones is a tough sell, and I know a lot of people probably like Josh Downs, but so far on paper, it would be an upgrade over what we've seen from Anthony Richardson, and I love me some A-Rich, but this should be a little better.
Should be a little better, and we are already pricing in the, you know, the murky situation, the quarterback stuff at wide receiver 47. So even if you don't believe he's going to be the next Jackson Smith and Jigba, and, you know, him getting all the way to wide receiver 10, I would love it. It would be maybe the second, third best thing that's ever happened to me in my life. But he even if you don't believe that, he's still a good pick at wide receiver 47 there. Certainly just a lot of upside where he's going.
Well, Matt, I know you say that facetiously, and I'm not going to go as high as wide receiver 10, but I think at this time last year, people would have laughed at how high Jerry Jeudy finished. I guarantee you people would have said there's no way Jerry Jeudy, especially after being traded to Cleveland, there's no chance. And then you look up and you're like, wow.
I would have said it.
I mean, we all would have said it, right? And then it happens. So you got to be on the field. And if he's on the field and able to develop that chemistry, it will just be interesting to watch that offense here, because this is This is Shane Steichen's third year as well. This is year three for him. So this is going to be an interesting offense to watch, to say the least.
Yeah, the Judy point's instructive because bad quarterback play is not always equal. We typically do this with wide receivers. It's like, oh, the guy doesn't have a good quarterback. But like we're talking about, there's levels to breakout wide receivers. There's levels to bad quarterback too. And certainly sometimes a bad or below average, you know, subpar, whatever nicer word you want to put on it, like that guy's skill set can overlap with a wideout. And I think Daniel Jones overlaps pretty well with Josh Downs, just like Jameis Winston, who, look, I know fantasy players love Jameis Winston. He's like the third quarterback on the Giants right now. He is a subpar, whatever nice word you want me to put on it, quarterback. But his game as an aggressive passer that is willing to take chances on those deep inbreakers that Jerry Jeudy actually got to run from the flanker position last year overlapped really well with Jerry Jeudy, which pushed him to the finish that he had last year after being 44th among wide receivers in yards when Deshaun Watson was under center. So that is a good instructive point and something that we should keep in mind here. I want to get to my second candidate here, another year two wide receiver to go along with Roma Dunze. That is Ricky Pearsall at wide receiver 45, overall ADP of 81st. I get the problems in the profile for Ricky Pearsall, including the fact that he is currently dealing with a hamstring injury. I think people like overreacted to that a little bit, like, oh, he's not going to practice till training camp. It's June, it's May, nobody cares. Like, he as long as he's there in training camp, that's fine. At the same time, the words of Scott Pienowski are ringing in my head here of injuries are going to find you in fantasy football. You don't have to go looking for them. I don't love the fact that he is currently dealing with something. That being said, Ray, he is another guy that I think is very likely to be misunderstood coming off of his rookie season from an efficiency standpoint, because the guy was shot in the freaking chest in August. Okay. And like I said, I don't like rookie receivers missing any time during the offseason. I certainly don't like it when they miss time in the offseason, then into the season with a damn gunshot wound. Okay. Yeah. So the fact that he even got on the field is pretty big. Secondly, even when he wasn't performing statistically, you could see on tape that he was being deployed in a very unique role that I think is kind of instructive to where the 49ers offense is going, as more of a true drop back offense and kind of away from the typical Shanahan gadgety things of that nature. And also the most important part of this is, man, Ricky Pearsall in his final four games, Ray, from a reception perception standpoint, was just tearing it up against man coverage. And that actually actualized itself in the final two games when they really made him a key part of their game plan. So beyond the fact that I like Ricky Pearsall, another reason that I like drafting him and I want to be in on him as a potential leap candidate is that all these 49ers receivers just go way too late in drafts. I don't really quite know how this is going to go, but somebody from this wide receiver core is going to be a top 30 receiver. And currently none of them go in anywhere close to that range. Multiple of them go outside the top 35. I believe Juwan Jennings right now, wide receiver 34, that's come up a little bit, but Ayuk, who's banged up, is down at 46. Pearsall is pretty low ranked as well. So I want to draft somebody from this offense. And I do think like year two wide receivers are always a bet I want to take.
I'm just going to say, do people not want a part of, in 2023, 4,280 passing yards, 31 passing touchdowns. Last year, down year, one less game, 3,800 passing yards with 20 touchdowns. Like, I want a piece of this offense. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Give me Ricky Pearsall. This is an efficient offense. It's a downfield, explosive offense. And the way that he was used towards the end of the season, like this is a player who was a first round pick, right? Like Ricky Pearsall was drafted in round one of the NFL. I know that with the success of Marvin Harris, with Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas, Ladd McConkey, the excitement for Marvin Harrison, it's tough to remember that Pearsall was picked in the first round. He was one of the first 32 players off of the board. He's incredibly talented. And yeah, the injury right now stinks. I'd rather my player be healthy right now than on the injury report, absolutely. But I'm looking at the calendar right now, Matt. It's June 6th. I don't need
we don't
Ricky
got any
Pearsall
games coming up.
I don't need him to score me points for 3 months. So I'm going to trust that the professional billion-dollar industry medical doctors will be able to heal that hamstring before it's time for me to actually need those points. I'll take the dip. I'll take the value. Give me the injury discount. He's an incredible player tethered to a very efficient quarterback. Say what you want about how much he got paid, what he should have gotten versus what he got. He's a part of an efficient offense that's going to push the ball downfield. And right now, of all the receivers that are healthy, Jordan Watkins is just not going to scare me, right? Juwan Jennings is great at this stage at what he does. But Ayuk is dealing with injury. I want Ricky Pearsall. This is one I would say he needs to move down to the finalists. I really think at wide receiver 45, the type of offense this is going to be, Kittle's going to get his, no doubt. But outside of that, why can you not project Ricky Pearsall to assume and step up and be the wide receiver one in year two, the same way we're doing for Romo Odunze or for some of these other second-year wide receivers?
I mean, frankly, it's a very similar case to JSN. Like I said, misunderstood coming off of his rookie season for different reasons, but misunderstood coming off of his rookie season, just not really realizing how good he was in isolation, which was the same case as JSN. And secondly, you mentioned it, like at some point during the year, the Seattle Seahawks are like, we got to change the offense for number 11 to be our main guy. And like, we got to make him the first read player because he's getting open on these concepts, and we've got to cater that offense around him. Now, this is a different situation because it's the same guy that's been calling plays in San Francisco for a while and Kyle Shanahan. But we saw this happen, like I said, late last year. I'm telling you, they watched the film on Ricky Pearsall and saw this guy's smoking man coverage. We're getting a ton of man coverage because Christian McCaffrey's banged up. We're not threatening in the way that we used to be. Brandon Ayuk isn't out there. So teams are just trying to man up on the receivers. Ricky Pearsall was actually getting open against man coverage. And if they see that again this year, I think he'll be more of a focal point. Again, if he could be healthy throughout the course of the offseason. So, yeah, I like moonwalking him into that finalist spot as well. We'll try to find one more. We each have two more candidates to go over. We will go over those two guys each when we get back from our final break right after this. All right, we are back. Ray and I each have two more candidates to go over for the title, the honor, really, of being this year's Jackson Smith and Jigba. I don't know about you, Ray, but I have a little less confidence in my next two guys, especially my fourth guy, but it is worth talking about. And I actually really like your third candidate here, so I'm going to throw it to you. Talk about the Dallas Cowboys' newest wide receiver addition in George Pickens.
George Pickens, big GP. George Pickens is next up as my, what is he? Is this year three or four for George Pickens? It's year four. It's year four, but he still feels young. It feels like we're still waiting for the George Pickens breakout. We know how uber talented he was coming out of Georgia, and then we've seen some of the highlight reel catches during his time as a Pittsburgh Steeler, but it just has not really materialized for a variety of reasons. I'm not going to put those all on the quarterback situation. That did not help. George Pickens also some self-inflicted wounds playing wideout. But you're talking about a player who is incredibly talented down the field. There are certain things that Pickens does very well. I was chopping it up, Matt, with Dez Bryant one time, and he was telling me that, you know, I wasn't asked to do 20 different things. I knew my four assignments, and I did them better than everybody else. I made sure that when it was a go route, I was the best downfield. If it was a, right? Like, that's what they were asked me to do. I did those four things. The beautiful thing about Pickens in Dallas is he's probably not going to be asked to do a whole bunch of stuff because they have one of the best wide receivers in the NFL, CeeDee Lamb. I don't care where he's lined up on any given play. He's the primary target for Dak Prescott, but he's in a role where he's going to be able to thrive as the secondary option, right? There's not going to be a lot of safety allocation on that side because you're just leaving yourself exposed for the better player. And more importantly, you've got a quarterback who has put up some monster fantasy seasons in the past. And we've been waiting for Dallas to find a number two receiver to, A, take some pressure off of CeeDee Lamb, but to open this offense back up. Since Amari Cooper was traded, they have not successfully found that replacement of what Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb were going to be. And that was prior when Michael Gallup was deployed and miscast as a one. They bring in a Brandon Cooks. They try out Jalen Tolbert. Now you've got a guy that's going to be able to stretch the field, do the things that he does well, and you're hoping that you're going to get more volume, higher efficiency, and more just ability to operate freely without all the attention focused on him.
Yeah, I love this like selection here. I think he had to be included in the conversation because, yeah, he's going into his fourth year, but his fantasy finishes so far have been wide receiver 36, wide receiver 26, and wide receiver 42. So, to me, Pickens isn't like a real – he's sort of kind of broken out. But like I said, sort of kind of. There can be another level for him. I was talking with my buddy James Coe yesterday about Pickens, and he's like, I can't believe that the over-under for him right now is I think 5.5 touchdowns because his career high is 5 touchdowns in 2023. And James is like – what, man, that 6 would be a career high. I'm like, buddy, the Steelers are literally last in the NFL since in passing touchdowns since Pickens entered the league. Like I think he can surpass that total. Like that's the thing for me. He could even be a guy like Rashad Bateman last year. And like, look, I think he will produce more than Bateman did last year because this is just a totally different passing environment. Had to get one Rashad Bateman reference in here today because I'm not going to include him on this list, but he will always be on this list in my heart. Nevertheless, like he was a guy in Rashad Bateman that had high yards per catch, 9 touchdowns, and he ended up becoming like that was his best season. And I think Pickens could do something like that where maybe the consistency isn't always there, but like from a week to week perspective, he might be like a quote better in best ball type of guy, George Pickens. But when he hits, he's going to hit really, really big. And even if the journey to get to his final numbers might not be smooth, just because to no fault of his own, he's playing alongside one of the elite receivers in the league and CeeDee Lamb, but the final numbers can be really good. And when he hits, he can hit really high.
Matt, let me give you a little list real quick on Pickens's deployment? Can I give you a little quick list on Pickens? Fantasy points per game on go routes from the outside. When aligned outside, you're running down the field. How many points per game are you scoring on go routes in 2024? Here are the players ahead of George Pickens. You've got Mike Evans, Malik Nabers, A.J. Brown, Justin Jefferson, Rashee Rice, right? That's a small sample. Cortland Sutton.
Yeah.
Terry McLaurin, Devontae Adams. And I just left out the players with less than 10 targets. That's it. George Pickens is almost scoring 3 points per game on one route, which is double anything he's scoring on anything else, like down the field stuff. So if you just allow him to do the stuff he does well, which is he does a lot of wide receiver screens, he gets down the field a lot, let him run those things with Dak and the attention focused on CeeDee Lamb still, a more spread out defense, this is how Pickens ascends to another level. Is he going to get to the place that we wanted him to be when he was the ISO target in Pittsburgh? No. Like that ship and that level of expectation for Pickens has sailed, but can he be one of those? I think what he can be, Matt, is you know when you look at the secondary wide receivers and you're ranking T. Higgins and Devontae Smith,
yeah,
and who's the best number two? I think Pickens has the chance to ascend to the best number two wide receiver in the NFL. Can he do that with Dak in this offense? I think that's definitely within his range of outcome this season.
I was going to say, why can't he be T. Higgins, who was wide receiver 4 in points per game last year? Obviously, he didn't play a full season. He only played 12 games, so that's why that's there. But like Ja'Marr Chase had the nuclear season, and T. Higgins was still really, really good. Now, I think the Cowboys defense is going to be better than the Bengals defense last year. So that's right. Going to be a part of it. But at the same time, this is a really fruitful offensive environment. And sometimes it's better to be the man besides the man instead of just the man. And I would frankly rather be the wide receiver 2 in Dallas than the wide receiver 1 for Kenny Pickett in a Matt Canada offense and all that kind of nonsense. So I think Pickens is a good candidate as well. Let me throw to one that, again, like George Pickens is underrated. He's underdrafted right now. He should be going higher. I'm not so sure that I can draft Jaden Reed much higher than wide receiver 43 because of all the factors, the unknowns here. But man, I still think Jaden Reed is a really, really good player. If he can clean up the drops, I think he's underutilized in this Packers offense. Like, I know they've kind of pigeonholed him into only being a slot guy and he only plays in 2 receiver set or 3 receiver sets, all that stuff. man, like I watch him play. He's one of the best receivers from a production standpoint against zone coverage. And I think there's more man coverage beating ability to him than he has really gotten credit for at this point. They just drafted Matthew Golden, who obviously, I mean, I think Matthew Golden could have a really good season this year. He doesn't count in this exercise because he's a rookie. But Jaden Reed's a guy that I do think the community feels like they've reached a decision point on who Jaden Reed is. He's this kind of boom bust guy. He's a slot only player. Maybe the Packers have reached that conclusion themselves too. And I'm just coping that this doesn't happen, but he's a really talented wide receiver that I do think could be able to make another jump here, Ray, even if it's not quite Jackson Smith and Jigba level, like he's going to get to wide receiver 10 or whatever.
Well, he can absolutely make a bigger jump. And some of that, as you alluded to, is on Jaden Reed to clean up some of his issues, right? Putting the ball on the ground, you've got to secure those catches. But some of it was absolutely the deployment. Like, I'm tired of watching him run orbit motion and they just toss it to him and say, hey, go make a play. And then inside the same game, they'll give him a 50-yard go route. He'll catch it. And you're like, do that some more. And you don't see it for 4 weeks. It's just, you know what's going to happen with that offense. So I don't know if that was a little bit of Jordan Love. Remember, he got banged up, I believe, week one. Versus Philadelphia, Jordan Love got banged up in week one, and then it was just, let's grind it out with Josh Davis.
Got re-injured too later in the season. That's the whole thing.
That's what I'm saying. So all of that stuff factors into it. When you look at Reed and what he did from the slot from a point-per-game perspective, he was still top seven in the NFL scoring from that position, right? And that's without him. I mean, he went absent. Sometimes you didn't even know if he were on the field. I'll say this. The inclusion of Matthew Golden, I think this is a bigger deal for the offense, and it might not be as big of a deal for Golden individually, but not having Christian Watson out there to do the thing that he does very well, which is stretch the field, let Jordan Love open up the offense with the live arm. Like, that was non-existent. No one feared Romeo Doubs running down the field to that degree, Dontavian Wicks running down the field to that degree, and the Green Bay Packers didn't give Jaden Reed that opportunity to do it. But bringing in Matthew Golden to stretch the field, you see the projections right here, if this allows for Reed to operate more openly underneath in the role that they've kind of cast him in, I'll just say this, Matt, maybe the level of breakout in this conversation that we're having, it's not Jaden Reed breaking out into the top 10, but can he break out and level up and regain the faith and the confidence of fantasy gamers and outkick wide receiver 43 coverage? I don't think that's a crazy bad bet at all whatsoever.
Right, because like technically he way outproduced that last year. He was wide receiver 26, but anybody that had Jaden Reed on their fantasy team, and I was one of those people, knows that was not like he was wide receiver 26 all year long, which that's just not how the position works. But he had those like two monster weeks, and then he'd go super, super quiet because of the usage. And like you mentioned, the passing volume. I think you made two great points there, Ray, in that Matthew Golden, even if he doesn't become like a number one wide receiver for the Packers, that doesn't matter. It's not that, they need an alpha. Everybody could use an alpha receiver. It's really, really hard to find one, and those guys are rare. But he can be tactically valuable just because of his deep threat ability. That's key. And secondly, I do think that this is where we make profit in fantasy football, is when people just assume like this is how it was and this is how it will always be. And I think the Packers run pass ratio of last season, when they were 32nd in neutral pass rate last year, like if that ticks up to 22nd or something like that, there's going to be some value in this wide receiver room. And it could tick up simply because their quarterback that they paid a bunch of money to is just healthier this year. Like, that is well within the range of outcomes. And that's the ambiguity that I think is worth like still taking a guy like Jaden Reed. Or look, I'm not at all against taking Matthew Golden where he goes, or in the very, very late rounds. Like, you know, I don't know that Wicks or any of those guys will be like real deal contributors, but if somebody gets hurt, you never know. Like I said, I just think this room could be a little bit misunderstood, and I think Reed could be a little bit too pigeonholed in what he has always been, and there could be some change there.
100% agree with you totally on that.
All right, let's get to our last two candidates here, and we both have in the doc, like, I don't know if we really buy this one, but it's worth mentioning. You have a year three guy here, so you go first.
I do. Yeah, I do. And this is one, again, levels here, folks, levels. is a player that I just think could be probably a lot better than we're giving him credit for right now. And I'm talking about New England Patriots third-year wide receiver DeMario Pop Douglas, wide receiver 77 right now. Wide receiver 77. Now, this relationship has to be symbiotic, right? If Drake May is going to take this massive step forward, Drake May is going to take this leap forward. You've got this offensive coordinator change. They develop everything around him. They protected him up front in the offensive line. I'm excited about Kyle Williams too, all right? Matt, I'm excited about Kyle Williams too. But we do this every year. We do this every year. This is not
right.
This is not about Kyle Williams' long-term ability to be great for the New England Patriots and Drake May. But if you were asking me to put money on it right now, who's going to be out there week one for the New England Patriots? If Diggs is healthy, it's Stephon Diggs, it's DeMario Douglas, and it might be a Kyle Williams, but they do have Matt Collins there. Kayshon Boutte is on the roster, and I know from a fantasy perspective, those names sound disgusting. You don't draft them. They're on waivers, but NFL ain't fantasy, right? And that helps yield what we're chasing for fantasy football. All indications that I've heard is DeMario Douglas looks great out there. Chemistry is good with Drake May. The reason why most people don't see it is because we ain't looking for DeMario Douglas news. We're looking for Kyle Williams news.
Yeah.
And Drake May, if he does take that step forward, the position that he likes to hyper-target in bunches, and it did that all the way back to his collegiate time at North Carolina, is the slot receiver. Go look at some of Josh Downs' best seasons at North Carolina. It's when Drake May was throwing him the ball out of the slot. This is where DeMario Douglas is going to play. He is not an outside wide receiver. That is not his skill set. If this is the starting wide receiver for the New England Patriots in the slot, DeMario Douglas, I promise you, you're going to look up and be like, damn, in PPR, I would have loved to have drafted him in the last round. There's no 76 wide receivers. It doesn't line up. If May is going to have this ascension, it's not Kyle Williams becoming Ja'Marr Chase in year one. It's probably spread out across a distribution of players. And this is a guy who already had a 65-plus reception season under his belt with instability at the quarterback position.
No, I'm so guilty of exactly what you're saying, where, you know, it's just like, well, Stephon Diggs, Kyle Williams. Pop Douglas is there, man. But he profiles as exactly the type of guy that just is a thorn in the side of, you know, fantasy managers, like our third round hype rookie and Kyle Williams. Like, where are the Kyle Williams targets? And Pop Douglas, because he's just a solid player, not a high ceiling, but just a solid slot receiver, kind of a weird slot receiver too, because he's like a better man coverage beater than a zone coverage beater. I actually think his zone route running is a little like hit or miss, but when he's just like got an isolated like a little quick route against man coverage, like hit the flat, like he can be really, really useful, and he just like that constant thorn in the side here. So yeah, again, I can. Is he going to be the next Jackson Smith and Jigba? Probably not. But I do think he could be more useful than maybe the wide receiver 77 ADP would suggest. I mean, look, I love Kyle Williams. I'm a big Kyle Williams fan. The community is pretty aggressive. Like, even the redraft community is very aggressive on Kyle Williams. Like, Best Ball Bros are taking him inside like the top 60 wide receivers, which I can't remember like a third round rookie ever going that high. And again, I love Kyle Williams, but
me too.
We'll see what happens. We'll see. It might be, you know, year two, year three. He's coming from a lower level. He only really lined up on one side of the field. Those guys take a little bit of time, so we'll see. My last candidate here, and again, I don't really buy this one. People know I'm skeptical of the player, and especially skeptical of the role that he has been given in the Buffalo Bills offense. But I do think it's worth throwing Keon Coleman out here, Ray, because all of that can be true. You know, you can look at his deep red reception perception route tree and still think he's a good pick at wide receiver 51 or 52. Just because, look, you're attaching again. I know he's got nobody knows better than me that he's got problems as a separator. I don't think his best deployment is out there at X receiver for every single snap, but based on last year, based on their comments so far this offseason, that's the role that they want Keon Coleman to have, to be their X receiver. I think he'd be better maximized as a guy that you use off the line of scrimmage, a guy that's more of a power slot player. He's never going to play in the slot because they got Khalil Shakir, and I think they've kind of ticketed Josh Palmer to be that outside guy that moves around a little bit more than Keon Coleman. So I'm projecting him as their X receiver. Don't love him in that role long term, being like a consistent high targeted player. That being said, he's not useless. He's really good on slant routes. He's not great, but he's solid in contested situations. And he's actually really, really good in the same way that Gabe Davis was as a guy. Like, honestly, not a good separator, not an ideal fit at X. But just like Gabe Davis, Keon Coleman showed as a rookie, he's really good at like getting free on these improv scramble drill plays, which is going to put big plays in the box score when you got number 17 Josh Allen as your quarterback. So he might be like a best ball only guy, but for all my problems with the way the Bills use Keon Coleman and sort of his player profile, I absolutely don't mind taking the shot on him outside the top 50 receivers. He probably needs a role change or to really, really take a step as a player to be the next JSN, but is somebody, again, at that ADP that I don't mind drafting.
I'll just say this. I, too, despite some things that concern me when watching Keon Coleman play, I'm a little excited for year two, Keon Coleman. And I'll just say this. When I'm looking at result of percent of targets that result in a first down or a touchdown, when aligned on the outside, I've got all the receiver names that we talked about today. Matt, all the receiver names on there. Keon Coleman, 40.8%. The only people higher than him was Ricky Pearsall, Chris Olave, and Jackson Smith and Jigba. So I'm in a better target conversion percentage when aligned on the outside than Downs, Odunze, Marv, Reed, Pickens, and DeMario Douglas. So if he can be a more consistent, that's the thing, right? The consistency, the talent is there.
Yes.
He absolutely has the talent and the ability to win in the NFL and therefore return fantasy points for us. Can he develop that consistency? The environment should be there. His role seems to be pretty solidified. We want some more consistency out of Keon Coleman, but I, too, despite a very red tree, Matt, I'm still a little bit in on Keon Coleman. Reluctantly, because you're just, what you're trying to project is him just ascending, right? Natural progression of somebody that we hope works hard, goes out there, and he gets a little bit better, right? And I think that is okay to project for Keon Coleman.
Yeah, and speaking to the working hard point, you know, apparently the Bills asked him to come into camp in better shape this year, really lock in, and apparently he did. They're very happy with that. So that's like a good positive note for him. And yeah, like, he's a flawed player, but like I said, he is not a useless player, despite the fact that he is, like, he's a below average separator. I don't know how you could watch him and come to any other conclusion based off his rookie year. But that doesn't mean that he's useless. I mean, frankly, a guy like Cortland Sutton was not a good separator as a rookie, and he's developed into a nice, he is also a flawed player as Cortland Sutton. He's not a perfect number one wide receiver, but he's perfect in Sean Payton's offense because he smashes on slants and in tight coverage and like some of these inbreakers. And I would say the best stuff in Keon Coleman's game, and this is an offense too that Joe Brady, it's not very Saints-ish, but he does come off that tree. They want their X receiver running a lot of slants and winning in tight coverage. So that's why they have Keon Coleman ticketed for this role. So regardless, I just want to get on the record that, like, he doesn't stink. He's just a flawed player. And I will certainly take a flawed but not useless player at wide receiver 51, 52 when they're attached to Josh Allen. Like, especially in best ball. I don't really know if I want to do it in redraft because I don't know when you're, like, guessing the Keon Coleman games. That's going to be, like, a real pain. Yeah. But in best ball, when I'm just getting the points, I think he's worth attacking there. So, all right, Ray, we have each outlined four candidates. We both decided to moonwalk Rome Odunze, Ricky Pearsall into the finalist list. Do you have one more you want to throw? And I'm going to give you full autonomy to make this guy a finalist because I would have said Odunze and Pearsall were two of my guys. So go for it here. Who is our third finalist that we're going to vote on?
I love Odunze. I love the call of Pearsall. I think for the sake of this conversation, let's go with George Pickens because I do love the environment. I like the offense. Let's go with George Pickens for the sake of this. I will just say there's a name in the show sheet at wide receiver 21. I wish he made the cutoff. But we can go with George Pickens. And I'm talking about who, Xavier.
Marvin Harrison?
I'm talking about
Xavier Worthy.
I'm talking about X Worthy. I wanted Worthy I know he doesn't meet the parameters, but I just want to say very bullish on that. But let's go with Pickens.
Okay, before we vote on the three finalists, I just want, just because you threw it out there, Xavier Worthy, expand on why you really like him this year, because I have had trouble, not with Worthy the player necessarily, but just like how him and Rashee Rice sort of kind of work together. So give me the bull case for Xavier Worthy this year.
I'll be brief. His stretch down the end of the season provides the same way we're talking about Odunze and Moore and how they can work in tandem. It's Patrick Mahomes. Both of these players can be incredibly good in this offense. And there were people skeptical on Rashee Rice coming into this season. His start this past season was historic. But the way that Xavier Worthy's, not just his deployment down the stretch, but how much better that offense got when they found that explosive downfield weapon that became, dare I say, consistent. This is a player, it just feels like we're going to get one of them somebody's down there seasons from Patrick Mahomes. Just F it, throw the ball down the field. And I think Xavier Worthy's maturation through the season and what he can do that differentiates from Rashee Rice. And let's just keep in mind, this is a player coming off of a significant injury. I know the camp clips look good, but we normally give ourselves a little bit of time before we just, I don't expect Rice to just drop back in to that role from week one, Matt, and Worthy provides something this team and Patrick Mahomes have not had since Tyreek Hill.
It's a good point. We better see some more like F it, somebody's down there somewhere from Patrick Mahomes. I'm kind of tired of watching like the Mickey Mouse stuff that we've seen the last couple of years. And look, I mean, Worthy, actually, if they use him more as that vertical receiver, which I think that's some of his best like separation stuff is down the field, he's not going to be a consistent low A dot guy, because unless they truly design it that way, because he just doesn't win against man coverage at the level that you want him to, but he can really rip it downfield. So that they should be a complementary tandem. It's just obviously some of the peripheral metrics look like Rashee Rice's metrics to start the year. But I'm glad you brought that up too, because I like Rashee Rice. I like the role that he plays, but I do feel like that some people, especially in the dynasty community, are just like, yeah, well, look what he did in those first three games, like points per game, this, that, and the other. It's like, well, we didn't see that play out over a full season. We don't know if he would have just operated at that level over the course of a full season. You don't have to pay that price to draft him right now, but it's just worth keeping that in the back of your mind, especially as he's coming off an injury. So I'm glad you said that about Xavier Worthy, because he's a guy that I haven't been targeting a bunch, but I do think that's a good like other side of the perspective here for the listeners and the viewers to get. But let's finish it up here, Ray. Let's vote on our three finalists. So order them 1 to 3, most to least likely to be this year's Jackson Smith and Jigba, Rome Odunze, Ricky Pearsall, George Pickens. What's your order 1 to 3? I'll give mine. And if we tie, producer Colin gets to break the tie here for
us. All right. So number one for me, it's Rome Odunze. Rome Odunze is numero uno on my list, followed by George Pickens of the Dallas Cowboys. And at three, I've got Ricky Pearsall, wide receiver of the San Francisco 49ers.
Well, no need for Colin to weigh in here, because we're going to have the exact same 1 to 3 order here. My number one is also Rome Odunze. I mean, I'm pretty sure you can surface the pod clip from like October, November last year when I was like, Jackson Smith and Jigba's rookie season. Keep that in mind when we're talking about Rome Odunze in the offseason. So I would be a complete hypocrite if I didn't, you know, stand down on here and just say like, yeah, Rome Odunze is that guy this year. I love Ricky Pearsall. Maybe if he was fully healthy right now, I'd have him in my number two spot. But the reality is, like, we're talking about fantasy football here, and fantasy football, I don't know if you guys know this, touchdowns really, really matter. And I just think George Pickens is going to score a shitload of touchdowns this year. So he could easily just walk in. Again, if it's not, might not be consistent over the course of the year, but he could end up finishing as that like wide receiver 13, 14, just because he scores a lot of touchdowns. But I do really like drafting Ricky Pearsall. So Rome Odunze is this year's Jackson Smith and Jigba. As always, this year's this, that, and the other, it's said with its tongue in cheek. It's supposed to be fun. Not everybody's going to, nothing works out perfectly cleanly. But Ray, I'm really glad that we agree on this, that Rome Odunze is a guy that I do think people are really underrating right now. What he showed on film last year, combined with a new blank slate for him, the quarterback, everybody involved here, I am so excited about this guy's second season.
Yeah, 100%. This is a player that I just, I know it's tough when Malik Nabers goes gangbusters, when you've got Ladd, right. when you have Brian Thomas, when I know it's hard to be like, oh, well, he didn't do it. He's the one that he was also in an environment that just didn't yield any of that for anybody. I mean, if you don't remember, DJ Moore got to 1,000 yards, like I think on the last play of the game, of their final game of the season. It was just an absolute mess in Chicago. I'm very excited about his environment change up front with the offensive coordinator, with the head coach. And that, honestly, I think the talent at the end of the season, you're going to be like, oh, yeah, that's why he was drafted where he was.
Well, I'll tell you what, I feel a lot better having this conversation with you. So thank you so much, Ray, for joining, even just to keep the Roma Dunze hopium very much alive on this end of it here. But tell the people out there what you're working on, what they can check out all throughout the summer and leading up into the season here.
Yeah, man, just check out the content on YouTube, Ray Garvin on YouTube, our fantasy football channel, DDFFB. And as I always say, trust the Trinity. You know, Matt and I both love the wide receiver position. I look at things from a different angle than him. That's why I'm glad he does what he does. So I could just take that and use that. But just looking at usage, offensive situations, and how players are used in each offense, you can find all of that over on my social media channel or on ddfantasyfootball.com. I appreciate you having me on, Matt. This has been a blast.
Absolutely been a blast. Yeah, I would totally endorse all of Ray's work. The Trinity is great. And like I always say with wide receivers, there's no like skeleton key. Okay. Yeah. Reception perception is great. It's part of the puzzle. And the Trinity is part of that puzzle as well. So we use multiple things when you're trying to find that next breakout wide receiver, which is what we did here today. Really appreciate Ray Garvin for joining the show. As I mentioned up at the top, I'm going to be out next week on vacation. So no show next week. I'm going to try and enjoy some time with the family and out there in Disney World. So wish me luck out there. Mickey Mouse himself is going to hear about Roma Dunze and why he's breaking out this year. But I'm going to be back with another edition of Flip the Script on Wednesday, June 25th. Until then, we are out.